Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I think you learn a lot in the first game, especially this one. You know, obviously there were some good things in the game, you know, obviously not enough, but there were a lot of things to build on. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, when you look at the game, there were 20 missed tackles. There were too much inconsistency on offense. You know, special teams was okay. You know, so we need to really just have a great week, one day at a time. We need to have a great day today and then have a great Wednesday, Thursday, Friday and be ready to go.
All right, so Seth, that was Bill O'Brien talking about the Chiefs game last week. And little hints in there of, you know, we did some good things, but we did some bad things. Seth, I was very excited for yesterday because on Tuesday is when Football Outsiders puts up their DVOA rankings for the season. You know, they rank all the offenses and defenses and special teams in terms of efficiency. Very nuanced. You and I both like that stat because it's just very consumable. And I think most of the time it's the most reflective stat of what real life looks like. It's the most reflective stat of the eye test. I think you can go pick and choose and cherry pick certain stats and go, wow, the Texans are top 10 at this or top 10 at that offensively. But if we watch the Texans last season, they were a middle of the road offense. When they needed to generate offense at times, they really, really struggled. They're all right, but they were middle of the pack. And certainly they were 17th in DVOA, right where we feel they belonged. So I was anxious to see where after one game they were going to be in DVOA because I thought, you know, maybe we can do this thing where when the Texans poke their head into the top 10 in DVOA at some point this season, we can have a big celebration that they're at least spending some time in the top 10.
Yeah.
They're 11th in DVOA after that first week, after that Kansas City game, after falling behind 31-7 and then putting up two meaningless touchdowns. And Seth, that's the thing that DVOA is supposed to guard against, the meaningless yards that Bill O'Brien is throwing at us going, we did some good things and we moved the foot. They're 11th in DVOA. Not that I'm rooting for them to be good on offense this year, obviously, but I was, as far as my gimmick goes, I was like, wow, I'm surprised they're this high on the list after that performance.
I think there is at least a little something to, you know, O'Brien saying that they moved the ball. The problem is I think he lumps some of the late fourth quarter stuff into the moving the ball. You know, he said it was too little too late. Well, like, yeah, that stuff, we don't count that stuff. I think earlier in the game, look, I thought like on that first touchdown drive, they moved the ball pretty well. I thought they moved the ball well later a couple times. They just ran out of opportunities while the game was still in hand. I'm not making any excuses for them, but there were things where when you look at that, you are able to watch that game, and this is what I'm guessing they would have done on Monday or Friday when they reviewed the film, was that, look, okay, here are the negatives. The negatives are really, really bad. But if you eliminate the negatives, let's look at the positives and what can we build on. There are things they can build on in that game. And I get it. Plus, that DVOA stat kind of – some of it is the level of competition and whatnot. So it doesn't start to kind of kick in until midway through the season.
Okay.
You can get an early jump or a late a bad start, and it kind of starts to compile.
They do DVOA for individual positions. David Johnson, third in the NFL for DVOA.
Yeah.
So for running backs, that is. Yeah.
Yeah, and I caught myself, I think on Friday, I don't know if I was dismissive of David Johnson's performance. It was just that I was so negative about everything else that maybe I ignored it a little bit. I'm not going to I'm going to be happy with David Johnson's performance until he gives me a reason not to be. I think there were certain parts of the Chiefs' game plan where they were much more focused on taking away the deep ball and taking away and addressing all that speed that the Texans have that opened some things up for the running game. But David Johnson had that last year, and he didn't excel with it. You know, they had – he was able to run over wide-open, non-loaded boxes last year, and he didn't look the same as he did in week one of this season. So if he's got a chip on his shoulder, if maybe he's just healthy, whatever it is, I think I saw some little glimmer of a little bit more pop, a little bit more explosiveness than I've seen out of him in the last couple of years, which was nice to see.
David Johnson seems like a guy, Seth, as we try to process the whole Jack Easterby positivity thing, David Johnson, just based on what you heard about him from Arizona, a lot of people in Arizona, when they moved on from David Johnson, were their take on him was, he was banged up a little bit, but most of all, he looked like he lost his will to play football. He lost his love for the game. He lost his desire to go break tackles. It's only one game. It's the game against Kansas City, but he looked pretty strong. Granted, against, you know, six-man boxes and whatever, but he looked like his old self with the jump step and breaking a few tackles here and there. He ran hard. He was always leaning forward and things like that. He might be a guy who is on the side of the specter where he does respond to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, where he does respond to the sports psychology part of it, if you will.
I think there's something about having a chip on his shoulder,
yeah.
Right? That long Bleacher Report article that came out right before training camp or right in the middle of training camp. Kind of painted a picture of a guy that wasn't recruited heavily out of high school, and he put a chip on his shoulder and ended up having a great college career, didn't get drafted highly, wasn't widely regarded, had a chip on his shoulder, ends up being arguably the best running back in the league in 2016, and I think right now he's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, if somehow he loses it, then that's an issue we'll worry about next season. I think for right now, he might end up being – is he worth a DeAndre Hopkins? Probably not.
Right.
But if he ends up being a workhorse back that can handle a whole lot of volume and they can get as many touches as – he didn't actually get that many touches the other night.
14 then, touches, yeah.
Yeah, is he worth it? I don't know. This is where I am with running backs. Like Christian McCaffrey, is his contract worth it? Technically not according to the analytics, but my God, if you watched him play football?
He's really good.
Just,
yeah.
I was telling Brandy that this weekend. We were, like you, we were enjoying being able to just sit down and watch football. And I can't remember which run it was, but a running back had a really nice run. And I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, like, this kid growing up, like, what am I going to tell this kid who just had this awesome run? And like, what are you going to tell that kid growing up? Don't be a running back,
right?
Because they don't get paid as well. It's probably, if it weren't for the physical toll, I think it's the best position in sports, man. Like, you get to just physically punish people when you're on a roll. You get to kind of, it's backyard football. It's the coolest position in sports in a lot of respects.
You get a lot of the glory, too.
Yeah, so I'm kind of teasing myself with this and allowing myself to maybe think, all right. Maybe he'll recapture a little of the magic and the glory.
I think
don't shut me down on this, Sean. I need this.
No. I'm actually going to back you up on this, Seth. It's the way you explain it to a kid is you go, look, it's probably an underpaid position in the ecosystem that is the NFL, but it sure does pay a lot more than putting roofs on houses and, you know, waiting on tables.
Yeah.
You know, it pays a lot more than most vocations out there.
I'll only have 6 years of making $10 million a
right.
year. Egads.
Yeah. Egads. Seth,
well, you know what? Emmitt Smith told me that a few years ago.
Yeah.
I was talking to him about this. About, like, the, you know, kids playing running back still, even though it's kind of going out of vogue as a position. And Emmitt Smith said, yeah, but that's what kids want to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's just an allure to being the kid, especially, like, in youth football. Think about what happens when you're on a youth football team that's got a stud running back. Nobody can beat you.
Right.
And everybody feels good about themselves just because of you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at that level, it's all about the running back, not the quarterback.
Yeah, that level running back is the quarterback of Pop Warner football. You know what I mean? Like, that's the straw that stirs the drink. Seth, this is a good question, I think, for you, because you were at least in the building when Greg Roman was here. As you pointed out yesterday, he was on Dom Capers' staff coaching quarterbacks. He's obviously a different coach now. Like most of us at our jobs, he gets better as he gets older. Why hasn't Greg Roman been talked about more as a potential head coaching candidate?
You know, I don't know. I always really enjoyed Greg Roman a lot because he was a young grad assistant. He was a young quality control guy when we first started up in 2002. And you know, he's not, he doesn't have a large personality. And I always admire coaches like who don't have large personalities because they don't feel like they have to follow the, you know, the movie version model of being a coach. And I think maybe kind of like Vic Fangio, that works against him because he doesn't have, he's not an extrovert. Like, he's not going to go in and give an owner a pep talk. Because really, Sean, that's interviewing for a head coaching position. It's not an interview. It's giving an owner a pep talk.
Yeah.
It's getting that owner to feel, hey, this is why you bought this team, and this is what we're going to do. And it's all about the 3 inches in front of your face. They love that stuff.
Two
they eat
words,
that stuff up.
Two words, Mike Vrabel.
They
openly said at his press conference that's how he got the job. He went in and sold them on Mike Vrabel. Hey, you want to be in the Mike Vrabel business, baby?
Yeah.
Vrabel LLC. I'm sure that's not what he said, but maybe something
and I'm
similar.
And I'm not saying that that's wrong necessarily because that's a lot of what being a coach is. It's motivating people. So maybe it's actually the best interview process. But there's a whole lot more that goes into it. So I think that's what it is because he's done – look, he got the absolute best out of Colin Kaepernick. You know, he's gotten – I think up in Buffalo, he got the – I'm trying to remember when Tyrod Taylor when the Roman years were. Anyway, he does some really innovative things and gets – and this is the key. He does innovative things but gets the offense to execute them, which is what it's all about, especially when you're trying to use deception, when you're trying to make a fake look like a handoff and vice versa. It's all about attention to detail. And he does a really good thing with that. I mean, he brought the pistol offense to the NFL because he thought that's what Colin Kaepernick would do best at, what he did in college. He's done a whole lot of new things with Lamar Jackson. And I think more than any other coach in the NFL right now, he thinks outside the box where instead of saying, well, this is what I am. I'm a West Coast offense, and we'll take some of the athletic things the quarterback can do, and we'll maybe sprinkle him in here. He says, no, 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 no. We're going to build from the ground up with this quarterback who does things like no other human being can, and we'll start with that, and then we'll build the other stuff in.
Yes, I think to that point, he was in Buffalo 2015 and 2016, so he did overlap with Tyrod Taylor there, Seth. I think to your last point there, he took over this offense last year. He didn't get hired as the OC in 2017 and was in the room when they drafted. I mean, he may have been in the room when they drafted Lamar Jackson, but he wasn't the OC. He took over as the OC the year after Jackson took the reins, and then he had a chance to observe what Jackson was doing for those seven or eight or nine starts he had as a rookie. And then, yes, he completely took what Jackson did as a rookie and then constructed a nuclear bomb out of it in 2019. A lot of respect for Greg Roman. All right, how did the Texans' offensive line play in week one? One side says not very good. One side said not so bad. We'll hear from both sides. Crossfire between Seth Payne and Bill O'Brien next.
Oh, no.
Texans' offensive line is a big topic. Really, it's been a big topic the last few years. It was actually more of a background topic during training camp this year than it's ever been with Bill O'Brien as the head coach, I think, because they're returning all five starters. Very talented group. They've invested a lot of draft capital, both with actual selections or in the Laremy Tunsil trade, to try to get this offensive line into a five-man group that they feel really good about. And the hope was that the continuity on the offensive line would be a big reason why the offense would take a step forward this year. However, week one, well, it depends on who you talk to, whether week one was good or not. Seth, this is you the other day. This is some audio that made its rounds both on our social media and the other shows. This was a take that I think really got people pretty emotionally charged up. This is part of your take on the offensive line's play in the Chiefs game last Thursday.
I felt like I'd been wronged personally because I was one of the people that, along with a cacophony of other voices, said, oh, yeah, well, look, you can actually feel good about the offensive line going into this season. I couldn't have been more wrong. You should feel bad about the offensive line right now. You should feel really, really bad because at least before, they had the excuse of just not having good athletes or good players on the offensive line. These are good athletes and potentially good players doing really bad things. They looked woefully unprepared.
All right, so that's Seth Payne. So let's do a little crossfire here.
Did you edit that, Ben? How the hell did I pull all of that out of my ass without any ums or ahs or anything like that?
You were passionate and emotional and speaking from the heart. You weren't thinking.
Yeah, I don't
You know, you
I
were
don't
just
even remember.
Yeah.
You were in a zone.
I don't remember even saying that, Sean.
Yeah, okay, no, you said it's not somebody, good. It's not Josh Beard doing an impersonation of you saying
yeah. No, Josh Beard doing an impersonation.
He would be moaning and waving his arms.
These guys can't even block anybody.
Right. So that's Seth Payne's take on the offensive line. No celebrity voice impersonated there. Now, let's do a little crossfire here. Seth Payne's take was we should feel bad about the offensive line after that one game, granted. Here's Bill O'Brien's take on the offensive line after week one.
You know, the offensive line, again, like I've said every year, I thought they actually blocked well. There were a couple times where there was a miscommunication. Somebody came free. I think we'll clean that up, give the Chiefs credit. They did a couple good things on defense. But I think that our offensive line really, I thought their run blocking was really good. I think pass protection-wise, there were a couple things. But overall, you know, Deshaun had some decent time. And then again, the other parts of it aren't always with the offensive line. You know, we had a hot that we missed and we ended up taking a sack on that. That's not the offensive line's fault. That's, you know, the skill guys, they've got to do a better job. So, you know, it's not always on the line. So I thought the line actually played pretty well.
Yeah, I disagree because you know how I feel about the line, Sean. It's that, for one, I mean, Zach Fulton alone could mark that hole. Like, Zach Fulton, there's no sugarcoating. He got his ass beat, right?
He got Sua Feload, yes.
Yeah, like, I don't feel like I'm being overly mean or anything. Like, I got my ass beat at times as a player. I'm not saying he's a bad dude or anything, but that was bad. That was really, really bad. There are other guys that when they make mental errors that are egregious mental errors that get your quarterback hit, that's playing bad as an offensive line. So when it happens multiple times, you can't, there is no grading out well because you played well most of the time as an offensive line. And some of those great run plays, great. You're blocking well versus a 6-man box. You want a freaking cookie? Here you go, big fella, you fat. Anyway, okay, now I'm getting mean again. No, they didn't play well. They did not play well. Deshaun was under pressure like half the time. Some of them were miscommunications. There were a few times where you could tell that Deshaun expected a player to be somewhere where he was not, where a receiver was supposed to be or a running back, and he was not. And so that's not on the offensive line. But no, they didn't play well.
Ben, cue up Bill O'Brien one more time because the part that bothers me. Look, I'm not a former player, so I'm not someone who's going to sit here and say, well, the issue was so-and-so didn't get his hands in tight or they weren't doing this or that against a certain front. I just, Seth, like you in some ways, when I hear something that just gets sort of just dusted off as if it's no big deal or something illogical, that bothers me. Here's what bothers me about Bill O'Brien's assessment. Go ahead and play it again, Ben.
You know, the offensive line, again, like I've said every year, I thought they actually blocked well. There were a couple times where there was a miscommunication. Somebody came free. I think we'll clean that up.
Okay, it's right there. I think we'll clean that up. Like, you can't just take something that is supremely fixable and then just brush it off to the side like as if we're just going to go ahead and fix that. Because by and large, against good defenses, you haven't fixed it in 7 years. Like regardless of the quality of player on this offensive line, Seth, the mental errors continue. Like when you just sit here and go, like, well, we can fix it. Okay, you can fix that.
That's exactly the problem. When the Texans' offensive line hasn't played well at times over the last six years in one game, it's not always because they're getting physically beat. A lot of times it's because they look like they don't know what the hell they're doing. And it just looks like, and frankly and honestly, it looks like a Bill O'Brien offense. That's what a Bill O'Brien offense looks like the majority of time over the last 6 years. It's been that, these guys don't look like they're moving in lockstep. These guys don't look like they quite understand what their responsibilities are on this given play. When it's ugly. Last year I thought they did a really good job as the season went along of cleaning that stuff up. I didn't expect to go back to square one where, hey, playing well physically 80% of the time, but like being really bad mentally 20% of the time, that's not a winning recipe. You're not going to beat good football teams that way. You're not going to be a good offense. And they just, Sean, you're exactly right. They simply have never been a good offense. I don't know if it's got to be Tim Kelly at some point. It's got to be Deshaun Watson maybe ascending one more level, but so far they haven't delivered it. And I'm with you. Just saying, we'll clean that up. I don't trust when I hear that it's going to get cleaned up.
That's right. That's a great way to put it, is trust. Like, okay, this is the week that it gets cleaned. This is the week And this is the defense that you're cleaning it up against? It's the Baltimore Ravens. All right. Okay. Text message. You can text the show 713-572-4610 as we roll on here on a Wednesday on Payne and Pendergast Sports Radio 610. Sean, you're a betting man. Would either you or Seth bet the line and take the Texans this week and the points? The texter says the line is Texans plus 6.5. I've seen it hover plus 6.5, plus 7. It's hovering around a really important number because, Seth, I think, not to go too deep into gamble speak here, but if it goes up to 7.5, I do think a lot of people are going to bet the Texans. If it stays at 6.5 or even 7, I think the money is going to be really lopsided towards the Baltimore Ravens. In which case, what I would tell the texter is that I don't plan on playing this game. I don't plan on betting this game. If I were to bet, I would probably fade the public because that's usually a good way to make money. They don't build these big hotels and casinos in Vegas by the public winning all the time. I would either stay away or I would probably take the Texans just to fade what I think is going to be a massive handle, a massive amount of money bet on the Ravens if this thing is 7 or less.
I don't think most people know what it means when you say fade.
Fade would mean go the opposite way. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry about that. That's why I prefaced it by saying gamble speak. Yeah. No.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I would take a look. If you want to bet the game, I would take a look at whatever way the public is betting, and I would go the opposite way, or I would just stay away from it altogether.
I wonder though too. I wonder if the general public, like the non-betting public, is starting to get more of a grasp of that stuff because now with the legalizing of gambling, they're putting it way more into normal broadcasts than they used to, right? Now it's actual like full-time sports commenters talking about it instead of some guy from New Jersey that buys time on the weekend to have a radio show talking about gambling.
They're also pulling way more squares in as well who are just recreationally betting on the weekends.
Call me a square?
No, I'm not calling you a square. Through osmosis, I'm making you smarter about all this. So
I'm a square?
You're more of a rhombus.
Now you want to invite me into your gambling club? No, thank you, sir.
You are not a square, but you are, I would say, a jagged-edged polygon. You know what I mean? You're probably a trapezoid or a rhombus at this point. I'm trying to get you to be a circle here pretty soon with no rough edges.
You always have to remember, if you think that the Texans maybe, if it comes down to a touchdown or less, that this is the coach who left Arian Foster in the game long after the game was over in Miami and tore his Achilles tendon. He will do anything he can to massage this box score.
The spread was 8.5 of the Kansas City game, and as bad as the Texans played, they still had the ball with a chance to cover at the end of the game. So, yeah, no, Bill O'Brien will go down swinging. I'm sure about that. If they fall behind by a lot in this game, he will go down swinging, and the starters will be in there till the very end of the game because that's his M.O.,
He'll bounce right out of here 7 years from now and into John Gruden's retired spot.
There you go.
John Gruden will retire and Bill O'Brien will be the coach in Vegas and everybody will love him for it.
All right. So John McClain joins us at the top of the hour. McClain had a really good stat in Bill O'Brien's press conference the other day that I want to bring up that may give some hope to Texan fans in this game. And also we'll do headlines in the next segment as well. We will dig into all of that next. John McClain, top of the hour. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast. All right, so John McClain brought this stat up on Bill O'Brien's press conference the other day, which I thought was interesting and maybe deserved at least sort of a drive-by to see if this is a situation that mirrors the 8 previous situations McClain brought up on the call. And John McClain, by the way, joins us at the top of the hour. Seth, the Texans have not lost 2 in a row in the same season since the 3-game losing streak to start the 2018 season. So they lost 2 more games that year and 6 games last season. They responded to each of those 8 losses going back to 2018 with a win the following week, which on the surface you go, well, that's a pretty impressive level of resiliency. And they're going to need that because they're going from the frying pan into the fire in terms of the caliber of opponent. They're not stepping down in weight class at all. This week, they're going from the Kansas City Chiefs to the Baltimore Ravens. Before I dive into who the 8 opponents were following a Texans loss, is there anything, you as a former player, is there anything to that? Is there anything to a team? Is there a level of impressiveness, regardless of who the opponents were the following week, to a coach being able to keep a losing, keep a team from turning one loss into a game that beats you 2 or 3 times?
I think there is something to it. I mean, part of it is that it's a pretty small sample size, that easily could have been, If we go through the results of that, I'm guessing that it easily could have ended up being 5-4 or something. But I think that don't we all kind of agree that Bill O'Brien, I think one of his strengths is that when his back is against the wall or when his team's back is against the wall, they seem to respond. We've talked about it a bunch this week, 2015, when it was really, really bad. After that Miami game, they came back and looked like a fundamentally different team the next week. The defense especially just was playing and executing their roles properly. They were playing selflessly. And that was at a time where it seemed like everybody might get fired at the bye week. So I think that, you know, when they started 0-3 2 years ago, they rebounded from that nicely. And I think that when it comes to rebounding after a loss, like last year, what was it? Two wins, one loss, two wins, one loss the whole year.
It was.
It's almost, think about the NBA playoffs when you go down 0-1. In the playoffs, you've only got a potential 5 games there, and there's a certain, or 7 games. There's a certain level of desperation, and teams come back, and you just know the Lakers or anybody else is going to come back and play really hard the next game. Football is the same way. You drop a game, and you know now, oh man, we've only got 15 of these left. And starting out 0-2 really sucks. Just to get back to 500, it's not just two more games. Like, if you're 0-2, it's not just two more games. It's two more damn weeks. It's a long time you got to live with being a losing football team. So, yes, I think that O'Brien does a good job of kind of sharpening focus the week after a loss.
Yeah, so the losses that he sustained that followed with a win, so the 8 games that McClain is talking about here, the last two losses of 2018, they lose to the Colts and Andrew Luck. That was the game at home. I believe it was a Sunday night game, I think, maybe. I mean, I don't know. It was the Colts game where Clowney jumped off sides at the end of the game and ruined any chance they had to pull off a comeback. The next week, on a short week, they go up to New York and play the Jets. And not a great Jets team, but that's they go up and they win at night on the road in New York.
Yeah.
The next week, they lose to the Eagles in dramatic fashion. They probably should have won that game. Again, Clowney kind of in the middle of that because he had the late hit on... boy, you're starting to see why Clowney was not on the Texans anymore as you look at some of these plays towards the end of the game. DTS, some of these plays, not S at all. The late hit on Nick Foles. And then the following week is a Week 17 game where they destroyed the Jaguars. I don't know that there's too much to pull from that.
Wait,
then,
he's had 2 late hits on Nick Foles in his career? Oh, no, never mind. I was thinking of Carson Wentz last year.
Yeah.
So Eagles quarterbacks is what he's done, yeah.
So then last season, they lose to the Saints in the opener. They come back and they beat the Jags, but they needed to stop a 2-point conversion in order to do that. I would submit that that was not a performance, even in a win, that they're probably very proud of coming off of a loss. They lose to the Panthers in week 4. They come back and they decimate the Falcons the following week. They lose to the Colts last week in Indianapolis. They come back and they beat the Raiders the following week at home in the eyeball game. They lose. Now, here's the one that maybe they lose to the Ravens last year 41-7 in week 11. They come back on a short week, a Thursday night game, and they beat the Indianapolis Colts at home. That was a game where Hopkins had the 2 touchdown catches. I'm not sure what happened to that Hopkins guy. Then they lost to the Broncos. They go to Tennessee and they beat the Titans. That's actually an impressive win. And then they lose to the Titans in week 17 when they were playing AJ McCarron. They win a playoff game the following week.
Yeah.
I would say the one, Seth, that if I'm going, okay, the one that makes me feel the one that mirrors hopefully this one the most is the they lose to the Broncos. They get blown out by the Broncos last year. And I'm not comparing the Chiefs to the Broncos. I'm just comparing the outcome of the game, where it was a game you were never in. You score some garbage touchdowns. You feel terrible about yourself coming off of that game. And then you go on the road and you beat the hottest team in football in Tennessee the following week. That's an impressive win. The scary thing is I think you're going to need an effort and a half of what you put on the field in Tennessee that day to beat the Baltimore Ravens. Like, the Ravens are, even though the Tennessee Titans beat them in the playoffs a few weeks after that, this Ravens team, let's face it, is a step up in weight class.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, and that's where they sometimes you fall in. These stats never hold much water with me when it comes to just anything smaller than 10 over multiple seasons in football. It turns into the same as when you're saying, like, well, this team, this franchise hasn't done well against a certain quarterback over. Okay, great. It's been like 40 different defenses over that course of time.
Yeah.
This is a gargantuan task they have in front of them. The one thing, honestly, that's making me double check myself and wonder, okay, what am I not seeing here, is the fact that the line is 6.5 points right now. The Ravens aren't as heavy a favorite as you might think when they're facing a team that's been blown out bad the last two times they've taken the football field, and then was also blown out by this Ravens team last year. So what is it about the Texans that Vegas sees that perhaps we as kind of bruised and battered Texans fans don't see?
Do you want an answer?
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson.
It's as simple as that.
And here's why. I'll give you some numbers here. The Texans Super Bowl odds, you know, the Super Bowl odds come out every week after all the action is over. The Texans Super Bowl odds, Seth, are all the way up to 75-1. There's only 9 teams with longer odds than the Texans to win the Super Bowl right now, and it's not a list of teams where you want to be associated with them. It's the Broncos, the Lions, it's Washington, it's the Giants, the Panthers, the Bengals, the Jags, the Dolphins, the Jets. Seth, it's all the teams that you and I were talking about being in the running for Trevor Lawrence yesterday. Those are the teams, all those teams we talked about yesterday, those are the teams the Texans are associated with right now. So they're 75-1, only 9 teams with longer Super Bowl odds, and yet, explain to me this, how then are Deshaun Watson's MVP odds getting shorter? Deshaun, after week one, went from 25-1 to 20-1 to be MVP of the league. And to me, the only explanation is, look, the Texans could still win a division this year. It's only one game. And if they do it, it is clearly going to be on the back and the shoulders of Deshaun Watson, because it ain't going to be on the back of that defense. And DeAndre Hopkins ain't walking through that door. It's going to be because of Deshaun Watson. Seth, that's the reason. Deshaun Watson is the only thing that's keeping this team's head above water in the pool of public perception right now.
I guess, too, and I was looking around the league at various, I don't want to say excuses, but I guess various reasons that people were giving for poor quarterback performances, and Tom Brady was the big one that leapt out at me because, you know, Tom Brady in some respects is dealing with the same issues that Deshaun Watson is dealing with, and that he's trying to forge a relationship with a whole bunch of new receivers. And in that game, I would say that looking at Tampa versus Houston, if I had to evaluate it based on just one game and one game alone, I actually thought Tampa showed more potential for being an explosive offense this year, just because Brady made some big-time throws to some really good receivers and some really big threats. He misfired on some – there were miscommunications.
Yeah.
And I think with Deshaun, you could say the same. Like, Deshaun did some good things in that game, but a lot of what went wrong with the offense was simply miscommunications with David Johnson, miscommunications with the wide receivers, miscommunications with guys who haven't had a whole lot of time to practice together. So I think if I was trying to handicap this Texans team over the next few weeks, and I wasn't trying to predict whether they're going to win or whether they're going to lose, I will say I trust that the offense is going to get better. Some of this stuff, as much as you don't want to make an excuse for them, some of it simply is that they haven't had enough time working together at full speed. And I don't even mean preseason games. I mean just the actual way training camp developed and the OTAs and all of that. So that'll get better. I don't think it's going to be enough this week, but it will get better.
Yeah. Seth, I don't know. As I'm looking at the numbers here, again, the Texans are up to 75-1 to win the Super Bowl, only 9 teams with longer odds. Deshaun Watson is 7th on the list for MVP candidates, and his odds got shorter, 25-1 to 20-1. And Seth, all it does is really just increase the focus on a question that I had coming into the season when the Texans' projected win total by the odds makers were 7.5, and everybody's talking about Deshaun Watson like he's a top-5 quarterback. I don't know if I can think of a team think of a quarterback in a team whose overall outlook are viewed more dissimilarly, where there's a greater disparity between the trajectory, perceived trajectory of a team and a quarterback than Deshaun Watson and the Texans. Deshaun Watson continues, I think, his star continues to rise, and maybe the contract helped continue to fuel that a little bit, but I don't think people are out on Deshaun Watson at all. Quite the opposite, if you look at, again, the MVP odds, he's down to 20-1 to win the MVP, whereas I think people are, whoever was left on the ship for the Texans from a national perspective, 30,000 feet are continuing to jump off of that ship.
Well, I think, like, let's think about coaches who have been fired because there was a belief or a perception that they just weren't doing enough with the potential of their quarterback.
Okay.
Jason Garrett, right?
Yes.
Mike McCarthy, and as much of that was at the very least, those two just seemingly hated each other by the end, Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. Let's see, who else? Which other coaches have lost their job because they weren't getting the most out of what either ownership, the fans, everybody else felt they were getting out of their quarterback?
Let's see. I'm trying.
It's more rare than you think. But I think the Jason Garrett route might be Bill O'Brien's route if they don't figure it out this year.
Oh, Baker Mayfield, I think, is one. You know,
I don't even count him. Okay. Nobody thought Freddie Kitchens. You know,
I'm struggling to find coaches who've been fired. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're. No, it's a very good name you bring up. I'm just thinking of, like, man. The Browns are such a mess, and Freddie Kitchens never should have been a head coach to begin with. But, that's a very good example.
Stafford's probably burned through a few head coaches. I don't think because of public conflict like we perceive with Rodgers. You know, like, Rodgers and McCarthy just clearly didn't like each other, and Jason Garrett had run out his string in Dallas. But Stafford's been through a few head coaches in Detroit, you know?
I know, with Stafford, I don't feel like it's necessarily been, though, that, wow, Stafford's not developing, so you have to get rid of this coach. I feel like it's been that Stafford's doing fine, but nothing else is. Get rid of this guy.
You're right, though. I mean, it's got to go one way or the other pretty soon here for the Texans and Bill O'Brien. Either you are a quarterback and a head coach who are simpatico, like Reed and Mahomes, like Roman and Jackson, like Carroll and Wilson, like Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury, like Drew Brees and Sean Payton, like Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger. Honestly, like most of the really good quarterbacks, most of them have head coaches who will tell the owners when they want to leave. I think the fear for a lot of people is that Bill O'Brien might be one of those coaches as well, that he's going to be able to dictate if and when he leaves too. We're at critical mass here pretty soon.
I think that if Deshaun Watson doesn't develop any further, I think it would be really – it would surprise me greatly if all of a sudden fan sentiment wasn't still very much pro Deshaun. I think it would be an almost impossibility to somehow trade away Deshaun and keep Bill O'Brien. It would have to be the other way around.
Yeah, I don't know the fans are ever going to turn on Deshaun. I think the big question would need to be, okay, if it doesn't develop, then when does Cal McNair, when do the McNairs start to feel the same way that the 80 billion owners the Packers had feel about Mike McCarthy until Jerry Jones finally felt a certain way about Jason Garrett? You know what I mean?
Hey, look, I know Bill O'Brien wields a lot of power right this moment, but Cal McNair, even if it was at Bill O'Brien's recommendation, who knows? Cal McNair fired Brian Gain when Brian Gain had, what, three years left on his contract?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think O'Brien's leash isn't as long as we assume it is sometimes.
As Kubiak back in the day.
Yeah.
All right, let's do some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Drop some Texans news in here before we get to the Astros and the NBA playoffs. Seth, a little transactional announcement yesterday. Are you familiar with Cahali Waring? Do you know who he is?
I've never seen him on a football field.
He's a tight end. I'm just going to remind you, he's a tight end they drafted in 2019. Yeah.
I thought he was out there doing an Instagram shoot when I saw him at practice. He's an actual football player?
He actually...
Why isn't he on the football field?
No, he was on the football field. He had 9 special team snaps in the opener against the Chiefs. The first 9 snaps in a real game of his career.
Did he make any tackles?
I don't know if he did or not. If he did, none that I noticed and said, wow, who is that making tackles out there?
It's interesting. Good for him. I didn't know he was an actual football player.
Well, I wouldn't get too excited about it. He went on the injured reserve list yesterday.
Of course he did. Look, I'm like everybody else. I have to keep reminding myself, and many of you might not know right now, but this year the injured reserve rules are way different this year because of the COVID. So you only have to spend 3 weeks. It's almost like going on the IL in baseball
now.
Yes,
it's the same thing.
So it doesn't mean Cahali Waring's done for the year. It does mean, though, that I'm guessing he has a legitimate injury. I don't think this was a roster move just to bring the Pharaoh Jones? Pharaoh Jones?
I think it
Pharaoh,
was.
Something. Very cool name.
Really cool
onto
name.
The roster. So, yeah, he's injured yet again.
Yeah, Pharaoh Brown. Sorry, Pharaoh Brown.
Yeah,
Pharaoh Brown. Went to Oregon. Third-year guy.
He sang the Happy song.
That's Pharaoh Williams.
I guarantee you he is saying it at some point. You can't not sing it, even if you hate it. And you're
that
sick
is true.
Of it.
He probably did he sing has, it, yeah.
He sung it in the shower or something.
On to the Astros. They beat the Rangers last night. The Astros are now, thankfully, into the the puppy dogs and ice cream part of the schedule here.
They're back. But no, Sean, they're back is what you're trying to say.
They're back on track. They are about to be. They're two games ahead of the Mariners.
Ball of butcher knives.
That's what they are. They beat the Texas Rangers 4-1 last night. Jose Urquidy, 7 innings pitched, 3 hits, 1 earned run, no walks, 7 strikeouts. Pretty damn good performance from Jose Urquidy. The 7 innings pitched is probably the number there that jumps out the most, because the Astros' bullpen stinks right now, and they're going to need Urquidy if they're going to do anything in the postseason, and we'll probably need him to go 6 or 7 innings, something he didn't do last year because he was coming off of Tommy John. Dusty Baker said Urquidy has been money.
He's been awesome all three. You know what I mean? His endurance is better. You know, we really wanted him to get that victory tonight because he's pitched well, you know, every time out, and, you know, nothing to show for it, and you know, tonight we scored those runs after leaving them out there.
Seth, who's the guy for you right now? Let's pretend the playoffs were starting tomorrow, and that Verlander is back, and Verlander's going to start a game for you. We'll see how it goes. But if Verlander can say, I can go, he's clearly starting either game one or game two of that series for you. Greinke is the other one. Like, those are your two aces. You know, they haven't been aces this year, but those are your two guys who start game one and two. Who would you pick to start game three right now if you're the Astros? Out of, I think the candidates are Framber Valdez, Jose Urquidy, and Lance McCullers coming off of the IL. Who would start game three for you right now?
I would be Lance McCullers.
Okay.
I think he's had the experience. He's been there. So is Urquidy in the World Series, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's going to be Lance. Unless Lance comes back and can't recapture what he had or what have you.
Margin for error. It's a 3-game series. I mean, it's not a 7-game series where you go, we'll throw Lance out there, and if it doesn't work out, we live to fight another day. If you trot Lance out there and he spits the bit, which he's done more often than not this year, it could be curtains for you in that series.
I'd put Urquidy out there. It's a 3-game series, and I think you have a really quick, you just have a quick trigger finger with him. And that's what I would do.
Yeah.
Sean, maybe I'm too sentimental about this. I feel like Lance could go out there and theoretically, I don't know, throw 24 straight curveballs.
I think you're letting your feelings for Lance get in the way of your good judgment.
Shut up. No, you don't know what we have.
Seth, I've done the show long enough with you now to know you're in your feelings.
You don't understand our relationship.
Dusty Baker with the update as well.
I've got a niece who's having some relationship stuff going on, and I had to stop myself from telling her, like, you're 15.
Okay,
this
that was my
dumb.
Question.
This is dumb. What do you do? You know?
That was my question. If she was 24, I was going to be like, well, this could be a legitimate issue, right? You know, if she's in a series. She's 15. Yeah, this is where you just go, look, a lot of fish in the sea. You live to fight another day.
Yeah, but they don't. That doesn't actually help them feel better about it in that moment. It
helps you feel
thing
better.
In the world. Her little heart was broken by this kid that I'm going to beat up while wearing a mask.
Over your
whole
face,
he
not just the COVID
lesson.
Mask. Seth's talking about a ski mask so nobody sees his entire face.
I'm going to go tell this guy I'm from Texas, and I'm going to cough in his mouth.
And you don't Dusty Baker.
Hey, by the way, we have been below 10% positive for our 7-day rolling
average.
Yeah,
things are trending. They're trending in the right direction. One other quick update. If you saw the game last night, you saw Carlos Correa, who I feel like I jinxed. When last week I said, boy, it's ironic that Carlos Correa isn't the only core player to get hurt this year, given how things have gone the last couple of years. And people are like, Sean, why did you say that? Something's going to happen now. Sure enough, last night, Carlos Correa fouls a ball off his ankle and had to be helped off of the field. Dusty Baker with the update that merely a bruise.
He has a, you know, like a bone bruise, and he took an x-ray and an MRI, I think. You know, it's a bone bruise. Nothing's broken. And, you know, he was... You know, he was scared. We were scared because, you know, he had a problem with that other ankle. So, you know, perhaps we'll wait to see how he is in the morning.
Seth, it's a little thing there. It's a minor thing. But when Dusty phrases it that Carlos Correa took an x-ray, I most of the time there's like a nurse or an assistant in there that's actually pushing the buttons. When he says Carlos took an x-ray, it makes it sound like Carlos himself went and unlocked the x-ray room and walked in behind the machine and started pushing all the buttons and then took the picture to Dusty Baker himself and said, Coach, look, I took an x-ray here. Anyways, Carlos Correa is going to be
fine. I thought
it
sounded like Dusty, like back in the 70s when they used to take their little red pills. Maybe they were called x-rays at some point. Let me pop a couple x-rays.
Yeah.
Double
x-rays,
header
air quotes.
Got an afternoon game.
Yeah.
Following a road trip, yeah. Yep. A couple x-rays. I liked two things about it. One, that he said he was scared because I got an image of like Carlos hovering underneath the lead blanket or something, and he was terrified or something.
Yeah.
I like that nothing, the x-rays were negative. There's nothing worse than getting whacked on the ankle.
Oh.
Or it's followed by the elbow, followed by directly on the kneecap.
No skin protecting it. By the way, Lance McCullers starts tonight, Seth, so we'll get a look at him to see if your playoff take holds up.
Yeah, my prognostication skills are on point, Sean. He's going to be lights out. He is going to go 6 1/3 innings, and he could go longer, but they're going to take it easy on him. I'm also going to... Were you watching when Todd Kalas relayed the little tidbit, since we're talking about getting hit on joints? When Springer got hit on the elbow, that was like the one night all season that he wasn't wearing his elbow pad.
Oh, really? No, I didn't hear him say that. Oh, God, that's
weird. Yeah, yeah. He'd forgotten it that night, or he just was spaced out and then bam, whacked on the elbow.
That's really weird. NBA playoffs last night, game one of the Eastern Conference, game seven of the Western Conference semifinals. Miami, they beat the Celtics in overtime, a game that Celtics had under control. They were leading by double digits in the fourth quarter. And this Miami team is a pesky team, man, led by Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. They're a pain, man. That Miami team is a good basketball team. They beat the Celtics in overtime in game one of that series. Jason Tatum just atrocious down the stretch in overtime of that game. The big play, Tatum going up for a dunk that would have put the Celtics ahead late in the game or late in overtime. And Adebayo rising up to block him at the rim. It was a tremendous defensive play. Go find it if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, Google that. I was swearing here in the morning for some reason. That's Google that stuff.
Yeah, Google it. It was really good. And then meanwhile, the Denver Nuggets come back from down 3-1 for the second time this postseason. They come all the way back in their series against the Clippers. So anybody hoping for a Lakers versus Clippers Western Conference Finals, you will not get it. Jamal Murray with 40 points. And the Nuggets beat the Clippers, who keep their streak alive of 50 years without going to a conference final, the longest streak for any major professional sports team among the big four sports. Seth, my big takeaway after watching both of those games last night is really Rockets related, and it's this. James Harden is a guy who's been the star of a team. It's made a few deep playoff runs here and there. They've done enough in the playoffs to where James Harden's star in the regular season and what he does statistically is still enough to, I think, in most people's minds, maybe begrudgingly at times, but still say he's a top five player in the league, top three player in the league, whatever the case may be. Some of these teams that are making these playoff runs are doing it with guys where you look at it and you go, man, these are guys where the parade may be passing James Harden a little bit right now, because we're starting to get to a point where I think the window is closing or may have closed on the Rockets here. There may be some James Harden fatigue that's already been going on the last few years where people take up for him in the regular season and just feel duped in the postseason. There's a lot of people that still are not on that ship. But look at the teams that are making these runs. Jimmy Butler is the guy on a Miami team that might make the NBA Finals. Like, the guy, Jimmy Butler. Jamal Murray, holy crap. Jamal Murray sure did look like a guy who can get whatever he wants, whenever he wants to, anywhere on the floor. Not in a totally similar way to James Harden, maybe in a more athletic way than Harden does it. But Jamal Murray is a young player who all of a sudden is putting up 35 a night in really important games and bringing his team back from being down in these series against better teams. There are stars, Seth, that are coming for James. Like, James Harden may see the dip as we head into next season and they start to do these lists where it's top this, top that in the NBA. Harden may find himself maybe not in 1-5 anymore. He may find himself in like 8-12 with some of these guys, Sean, that are having these postseason performances.
I have to ask you though, Sean, just to check, because sometimes I shock you, and it's a moment where you realize you're older than you realize you are.
Yeah.
Did you just call Jimmy Butler a young guy?
No, I didn't. No. And I'm glad you brought that up. Jimmy Butler is a guy. No. No, I called Jamal Murray a young guy. Okay. I get it, Jimmy. Okay. No, Jimmy Butler is as old probably as James Harden is, but all I'm saying is, with respect to Jimmy Butler, is you watch when the lists come. If Jimmy Butler takes the Miami Heat to the NBA Finals, and we start to get those lists like ESPN does, hashtag NBA rank, or the NBA does its top 50 players heading into the season, if Jimmy Butler takes the Heat to the NBA Finals, I guarantee you he will be ahead of Harden on all those lists.
Well, and this is something that I brought this up a few weeks ago, and
How old is Jimmy Butler, by the way?
He's 31.
Okay. Yeah. About the same age as Harden, yeah.
I brought this up a few weeks ago, and as I was saying it, I was like, oh, I don't want to deal with this crap on Twitter. So I actually deleted my account afterwards. But I brought up the prospect of trading James Harden and to a few different people. And I feel like the common refrain was, that's never going to happen. Why would you do that? This, that, the other thing. Now I'm seeing like diehard Rockets fans start to have this conversation. And I think that a lot of people are feeling the same way you are, Sean. At some point here, this window is either closing or may perhaps have genuinely closed in terms of actually getting a championship with this current roster right now. And the question is, okay, how do you regain all that capital that you traded away? How do you build from the ground up, or how do you build anew? And can you really be thinking about adding pieces to this roster as James Harden keeps getting a year older, year after year? I don't know. I think it's, what are the chances that James Harden gets traded away this offseason?
I think they went down with the news that Daryl Morey is back. I think that the chances of James Harden getting traded were going to be greater if they brought in a new general manager whose assignment may have been to do what you just said, which is, hey, let's rebuild. I'm actually intrigued if Morey were to do that. I would be very intrigued to see Daryl Morey do a tear down and a rebuild of a roster. That would be intriguing to me.
You think that Morey, I mean, because Morey, as we know, like he's phoning and texting 24/7. He's off in Europe talking to somebody in L.A. You think if the right trade comes along by some desperate GM, he wouldn't trade James Harden? I feel like if the right, I think if some deal like being able to trade for James Harden came along, he's going to jump on.
Let me tell you what I think here. I think you're right. I just think that Daryl Morey thinks so highly of James Harden that there is not a trade out there for the Rockets, it's going to equate to what you're talking. You can take the music down, Ben. We got to get to John McClain here. Daryl Morey thinks James Harden's the greatest offensive player to walk the earth ever. Like, literally, that's what he thinks. He thinks he's the greatest offensive player of all time. I don't know that trade exists. I think Daryl can remove emotion from any player in how he views a trade. I think Daryl can view a trade as being a data-driven thing better than maybe any human being on the planet. And that's not to say that he ignores chemistry. I think he values it, but my guess is he's got a quantitative value to it. He doesn't do it touchy-feely. He's like, we think chemistry is worth X amount to this team. So I think he would trade James Harden. I just don't think the trade exists, Seth, out there where Daryl Morey feels it's worth it to trade James Harden, because I think Daryl Morey thinks more highly of James Harden than maybe any human being on the planet as a basketball player. All right, that was headlines.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.